This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Atlanta! Braves might just do it. It's Dukes and Bell. We are live at Flowery Branch, as we do each and every week, getting ready for the Saints. I mean the Aints. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man, it is good to have you listening. Mike Bell, we have a situation that we need to deal with as we start the show. You would have thought, before we get into what happened with the Braves last night, that Major League Baseball would have the wherewithal and the forward thinking to say, hey, we've got a couple of teams that are in a hunt. We can't afford to wait. Let's go ahead and make plans so that we can get these games in.
Right.
But yet, here we are at 2 o'clock. We've got game two tonight. Game three tomorrow, guys. Guaranteed it's going to be rained out. All right? If you haven't watched a weather forecast all your life, I'm just telling you. So, Mike, what is Major League Baseball doing here?
Twiddling their thumbs. I mean, look, and the only real window we would have had was maybe like a 10:30 start, and the Mets would have to agree to that. I mean, you'd have to talk to the visiting team. There are some protocols there. But, yeah, if you could get both teams to agree, and the Mets would, because right now the Braves have a 6-5 head-to-head advantage over them in the regular season. If we finish tied, and this is the problem, we only play one of these next two games, the Mets win the division record.
Can't happen.
We've blown it against the Marlins too many times, and certainly the Nationals more than anybody. So, yeah, they win that tiebreaker. And because Major League Baseball's got such a tight window to start the wild card, you'd only have one day. That would be Monday, September 30th, for a potential doubleheader.
It is the most pivotal season or series of the season. And I think MLB is to blame for how they've handled this, knowing that the rain was coming, knowing that Helene was making its way in. I just feel like first we have to address that. If you're asking us right now, we don't have the answer to that. I don't know if the Braves do either at this point. As soon as we find out if they're going to do something, if they're playing late tonight, Mike, right. I don't know. We will certainly make that announcement. Here's the good news, though. With the win last night, we've put ourselves in position to really make this happen. And we said yesterday, we need two or three. We prefer a sweep, obviously, as Mike talked about the head-to-head matchup. But Mike, Michael Harris, and I laughed. Remember when I think we were up here. Maybe we were here. Maybe it was around camp. And we kept talking about Money Harris coming back. You know, he missed 2 months with that hamstring injury. And and you kept saying, well, he's got to come back and hit. And I was like, who do you expect it to be, Babe Ruth? Well, guess what, guys? He's been pretty damn good in August. And he's carrying this team right now.
And makes an amazing coming in, face first catch dive, if you didn't see it last night. So the defense, of course, is always there. But yeah, he was money last night. Money Harris has been that guy. Ozzie is still really struggling. You see it at the plate. He just does not look comfortable up there, kind of do some things, despite the one home run he had in the final game against the Marlins. And hats off to Spencer Schwellenbach, who just looks great. And it wasn't even a mistake. It was just one of those, you know, typical opposite field home runs to the chop house, Carl. But he I thought Schwellenbach did a fantastic job.
Well, we need this tonight from Sale. We need it tomorrow, okay, or whenever the hell they're going to play this game.
Right.
But we need our starting pitchers to be as dominant.
It's just a huge disadvantage to not have Sale be able to go against the Mets if this thing gets rained out.
I know, and it's probably going to change things up for us. But the good news is, as far as Harris is concerned, since mid-August, and Mike and I went round and round, and Mike kept saying, look, if he comes back and hits, we're going to be fine. That's kind of what's happened here. Over his last eight games, Michael Money Harris is hitting .486 with 5 homers, 9 RBI, and 11 runs scored. He's carrying us. We said this. I said Ozuna's tired. Somebody's got to pick this up. So last night you saw Money do his thing. We win 5-1, and now all of a sudden with the loss – with the D-backs, Mike, we find ourselves now just a half game out, and you're like, okay, maybe we can do this.
And D-backs are they're leaking. They're very leaky right now, so it might not be the Mets we're going to leapfrog, but we certainly got to take care of our business against them head-to-head. We certainly can't lose to the Royals. That's an obvious point. But, yeah, right now, guys, bands of showers. A couple of guys are going, Willie, 3-0 right now with the Battery. Yes, I understand. It's raining right now at the Battery. Thank you. Thank you, Captain Obvious. The idea would be to start at 11. And, yes, it's going to be a long day for the players.
It is.
But you're going to try to get this game in.
Correct.
And, yes, it'd be a long day for the grounds crew potentially as well. But if you could get three or four innings in before the storms come, and then maybe you get lucky, you get it in today. That's one of that's the point I'm trying to make, nerds. Sorry you guys aren't playing along, but that was never an option, so here we are.
Yeah, I just feel like I put this on. This is not on the Braves, guys. They don't make these decisions. This is MLB. And they knew that this was a potential situation that was going to happen. And so all that the Braves can do, as Snit said, is go out and play the games. Last night they played a hell of a game. But today you got to get another one. They'll get this one in today. All right? I'm just worried about tomorrow. And then it becomes, what do? And do you just postpone it until Monday? 404-726-0929. This hour is brought to you by the Man Cave Store. Up your Man Cave game this season at mancavestore.com. Let's hear Snit talk about Schwelly. Schwellenbach, as Mike mentioned, dominant last night. And the crazy thing is, do we forget he's a rookie? This isn't a guy that's been pitching for 4 or 5 or 6 years. When they brought him up, it was like, okay, we're going to go with one of our top prospects and see what he's got. He's been damn good since getting the call. Here's Snit talking about him. Yeah, he's talking about with his glove. I would agree with that. But the good news is he continues to keep us in games. And, Mike, when you talk about his 8 wins coming against teams above 500, those are good clubs. He's pitching against really good teams, teams that can hit. And in 2 of those starts, they've been against the Mets. So he likes pitching against those guys. He has surrendered just 3 runs across 14 innings. That's how good Schwellenbach has been. So Snit was talking about, you know, this particular outing last night, going into it and what he thought.
So there you have it. It almost sounds like the same thing. But, yeah, as far as last night with Schwellenbach, this dude has been so money. And remember, every time he takes the mound, Carl, he's pitching more innings than he's ever pitched before in organized baseball.
Correct.
Just the same things we had to deal with Bryce Elder and before that with Spencer Strider. But this guy seems to be handling his business and hasn't been a concern with the innings. I thought a great job, by the way, if you didn't see it last night, Iglesias. I mean, 5 pitches to get the thing done. And so you didn't sweat that for a second. This is just a team that, you know, I know, we're looking at these names and, you know, Urshela and Laureano.
Professionals.
And, you know, it's just, you know.
Professionals.
But, and, you know, Soler did a nice job, by the way, after struggling initially, yeah. Then had a big hit later. Ozuna goes 1-for-3 with the home run. And you already talked about Harris. So, I mean, could you potentially, yes, give me a puncher's chance. Get me in the tournament against Milwaukee.
That's all I'm asking.
And with the good pitching, maybe we can get some breaks.
That's all I'm asking. And if you go into the tournament with a couple of guys hot, then things can go your way. I mentioned professionals. Those are not superstars. Those are not game-changing guys. But they've been around baseball, and they know what's expected. And you know, Urshela is a guy that I think he earned this opportunity, Mike. I mean, it's not like, you know, they picked him up, and he was like, you know, crushing it. He got dropped off of a team because he was not playing well enough. And then he came in here and earned this playing time. It's Dukes and Bell, guys. We're live at Flowery Branch. Coach is coming up here, top of the hour, 3 o'clock, and then we're going to talk to Mike Hughes, one of our corners, about this defense. We'll get into the Saints. We got a lot to chop up here this afternoon. Michael Money Harris, let me hear him talk about being in the zone, because last night was one of those nights for him.
I know, it's fun. I'm glad I'm in that zone right now and trying to keep it going.
Okay.
Hey, man, that's what he does.
Yeah, I mean, look, keeping it going is the thing. And I'm glad it felt like to me, Mike, as I was watching this last night, it felt like he's still having fun. Guys are still having fun.
Right.
That's the key, right? They're not pressing. I feel like the Mets are a little bit because they realize, all right, this might be our moment. But for the Braves, it's like, dude, we're happy to just be in this position right now.
Well, I mean, the guy that you always worry about is Alonso, and the polar bear just had 1 walk. That was the only chance on base. And, you know, any time he makes contact, you're always afraid he's going to hit an opposite field home run. That's just the power he has. But they were able to neutralize him. Brandon Nimmo has been giving us trouble for the last couple of years. He wasn't a factor last night.
Sure.
Marte couldn't get a hit because it just, again, Schwellenbach just looks great. And, you know, it's small.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, But that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
And Glavin talk about it. There was a learning curve. It's just for all these young Braves pitchers, the learning curve always has to happen in a pennant race. You know, those guys started when the Braves weren't good, and then obviously they flipped the switch in 91, and it was different. These guys have always got the pressure cooker. So far, Schwellenbach, because, you know, he's got nothing against Elder. Elder just didn't have the top-end velocity that Schwellenbach can mix in.
No, I agree. And as we said, you know, when AA made this decision to bring him up, we were talking about where he was as far as a prospect in this organization, and was he a top 100 guy in baseball? He is, and he was. But it's all about proving it at the major league level. And he's done that, and he's done a heck of a job. It's Dukes and Bell, guys. Hit us up, find Mike at Mike Bell, ATL. I'm at Put 'em Up, see Dukes, the radio show. Dukes and Bell, 929. Follow the radio station at 929 The Game. Stay up on everything that's going on. That, of course, is on Twitter. We do not call it X. Coming up, we're going to get to some headlines. Also, we will break down what's going on. Mike just talked to me about the roster that the Falcons released today, and it seems like good news with Caleb McGarry.
Now, again, this is the Wednesday roster, but Sony takes the time to type this thing up, Carl. And so, yeah, Caleb McGarry is listed as your right tackle. So that's good to see. And, you know, as far as the center, you know, we knew that going into this, we were going to have to go with Neusel. And Ryan Neusel is listed as your center. Everything else is pretty much standard. But, yeah, I feel that, I like Storm Norton, but they feel that McGarry, and McGarry's a tough look. You know, McGarry's tough as hell, man. Looks like an extra from Sons of Anarchy.
Yes, he does.
So that big dude's going to go, and hopefully we'll be able to take advantage of the Saints' issues in the center of their offensive line on Sunday.
Yeah, I know everybody's going to be talking about this Sunday, guys, leading into this game, talking about our offensive line, the injuries we sustained last week against the Chiefs. We're not making any excuses.
Right.
Zero.
Is anybody talking about the Bengals' injuries on defense? Nobody's talking about that. I mean, they're 0-3. You know, we're 1-2. 2-2. I'm feeling really good about this, beating the Saints, short turnaround with the Bucks. But curious to talk to Coach Rob about some of the things we've been discussing earlier this week.
Coming up, they're heading to Tuscaloosa. We're going to dive into it as part of our headlines as Kirby gets his guys ready for the biggest matchup in college football this weekend. It's Dukes and Bell. We are live at Flowery Branch on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Odyssey.com. It is Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are, and we will continue throughout the course of the show, big show, 5 hours, waiting word to hear what's going to happen with the Braves and potentially this game tomorrow.
Right.
As Mike said, we started the show. MLB's lollygagging with this.
Yeah, I mean, and again, if you could have gotten three or four or five innings in, again, I'm not saying you would have ever gotten to an official game because the Mets would say, hey, wait a minute, you know. But in this case, you could have. So when you do play these makeup games, if they become necessary on September 30th, then you could have had a game you'd pick up in the fourth or fifth inning,
yep,
as opposed to doing full 18 innings. I mean, that's just trying to make it easier. Either way, it sucks. We lose potentially a guy that they gave an extra day's rest for the series specifically in Chris Sale's start. You got the Royals coming up, and now I don't know if you can manipulate this, you know, because it's like basically 2 days, and then, you know, by Saturday the weather looks okay. And then, you know, the Royals, you can't monkey around with the Royals either. We get that. Very frustrating. And because, you know, everything is so tight. And, you know, it's funny. Guys said, why don't we do doubleheaders anymore? I go, because the owners are too cheap. I go, it's hard to explain to guys of, like, Jersey Mike, our engineer, and Chris's age. There was a time, Braves fans know this, you would, for the one, literally, buy one, get one. You would have your ticket, and you'd go to Fulton County Stadium, and Negro would start one, and Rick Camp would start the other, and you two games, and you'd have an entire day of baseball.
That's how, Mike, I talk about it. I went to my first baseball game here in Atlanta at Old Fulton County, and that's
right.
How. I mean, Dad was like, look, we'll go, and they got two games. And I'm like, okay, cool.
And by the way, when you were a little kid, because baseball, now we've gotten back. One of the things, I give Manfred credit, you know, the pitch clock has worked, you're shortening games up, but when you were a kid, a doubleheader was like baseball frickin' heaven.
It was.
It was the coolest thing you've ever seen. I mean, it was like, oh. And then, and maybe sometimes you get an extra pretzel. you know, in my case, or a hot dog.
Yeah. No. It's true.
Drink those 44-ounce Schaefer's.
the refreshments. to have a full day of refreshments was awesome.
By the way, we had Banner Day as a kid at Shea.
Yeah.
They would do this thing where it would always be a doubleheader, and between the two games of the doubleheader, all the fans would make their own banners. It went back all the way to the Polo Grounds when the Mets were an expansion team, and you would basically walk on the warning track.
On the field.
And get to walk on the field with your banner.
Yeah.
And you'd be creative with it, and you had prizes and stuff, and it was cool. I think one year we won free bowling at Whitestone Lanes.
So the best part about those doubleheaders in most cases, it's Dukes and Bill. We're just talking about the Braves. Right. They win last night 5-1 over the Mets. They'll play today. We don't think they're getting that game in tomorrow, but this got us on this conversation.
Right.
The crowds weren't always great, and that meant you could pretty much sit anywhere.
You could jump.
And that was the coolest
thing.
Because
the one thing I've said, and you guys know, I've disavowed the Mets since they basically told the fans to blank themselves with, you know, with Reyes and those guys. You know where I stand on this.
Yeah.
You know, and Buck Showalter, there's no way in God's green earth I'd ever root for that team. But the one thing I think we could share, though, whether you were a Mets fan back then or a Braves fan in the 70s, it was a bad baseball. So it was cheap. And doubleheader, you're right. You could always find your way down by the dugout by the time you got to the seventh.
That was the thing. I'd be like, "Where are we sitting?" And my dad'd be like, "Don't worry about it." And right. We'd end up close.
Right.
And
exactly.
I'd be like, "Wow, these are great seats." But that's because nobody was there.
Right.
All right, man. We got a lot to get to. I do want to talk about the Dogs, guys, because this is the biggest game of the weekend. It may be the biggest or best game of the year. We'll see how it plays out. But it always is meaningful when these two teams meet. And, you know, when you go back and you look at the history, going back to 2018, since Kirby's been at Georgia, these have been big, impactful games. So he was talking about Alabama, Mike, and more importantly about his own guys. We said, you've got to get some guys healthy. Mikael Williams is one of those guys. He's been out. They felt his presence not being on the field. Kirby gave us a status on him today.
I'm hopeful. We'll see. He didn't do much last week. He got a lot of rehab Friday and Sunday, and was able to run and do some things Friday and Sunday, which is positive. But hadn't been out to practice today, and we'll see how today goes.
Hopeful.
Right.
You know, even with all their depth that they do have at Georgia, you know, still you want the best players on the field, especially in these big games, Mike. You know, there are teams you can go beat. Let's just be honest, and I don't know. You know, maybe that was part of what happened at Kentucky. Missing some guys, we'll still go beat these guys up, and then you find yourself in a game. But he says he's hopeful to get Williams back this weekend.
And that's a huge playmaker. You know, we talked about the over-under. You and I were discussing it earlier. It opened at 53.5. It's down now to 48.5. So, let's see. 24-27 would put you over, get you to 51 points. That last field goal that Randy Mack was talking about on the handoff. So that's you don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game, though?
I don't. I feel like what you're saying or less is right. Where I think this game is going to be. And the reason is because, again, defensively, both teams are really good. I mean, Georgia hasn't given up a touchdown, okay,
right,
all season. And then Bama defensively, they are playing really good when you talk about certain categories against the Dogs. And the other thing is, you know, these games, man, they're just weird. When you go back and look at some of these games, even 2023, the SEC championship game, Bama stops Georgia's chance to go to three-peat. The final score, 27-24.
Georgia is the, as you said, the third best defense as far as, you know, how many yards per game they're allowing. We found this little stat. Check this out, Carl. This is pretty interesting. With the, you know, again, SEC championships, you only have 1 week to get ready for those. When Kirby has, this is a great stat, when Kirby has more than 2 weeks, a week or more to prepare for an opponent over his career, he's 16-2 in those games. And the last time he lost one was that huge upset that Texas had in 2018 in the Sugar Bowl. Remember that one, the DeAndre Swift team?
That's right.
Back in the day with Jake Fromm. But anyway, Kirby 16-2 in those games. They average 36.4 and they allow an average of 19.4. So if you give Kirby an extra week to look at Jalen Milroe, which they didn't have the previous time, and obviously they learned something about Jalen Milroe, that's going to be the big concern for me.
Isn't that the Saban, you know, formula? Everybody always said Saban going into bowl games, right?
Right.
I mean, if you gave him 3 weeks to prepare for you, you were in trouble. And Kirby is the same way. Here's Kirby talking about Alabama's explosive plays. This is the thing that concerns me heading into this game. And especially if Mikael Williams is not playing, this is the thing that concerns me with explosive plays. Because I'm going to let you hear what he said about this kid, Ryan Williams, coming up. But for Dog fans, I'm just telling you right now, like, they've had great receivers at Alabama. This kid's come in. He should be in high school. And he's got 4 touchdowns already this season. This is Kirby on the explosive plays and slowing Alabama down.
They've got explosive plays that are off-schedule explosive plays, and they've got on-schedule explosive plays. So when you have a chance at both those, it just increases your opportunity. And their explosives are super explosive. They're not talking about the 15-20 variety. They're talking about the 50-60-70 variety. They've got some really good skilled players out on the perimeter that are explosive. They got a quarterback that defines explosive, and they got good backs. So our job is to try to prevent those, not give up big plays. And a lot of that starts with, you know, how well we play around the quarterback.
Bama ranks third in the country, or third in the SEC, in scoring at 49 a game. This is what Kirby's talking about.
Right.
And as far as those off-schedule plays, guys, that is Jalen Milroe scrambling and then hitting one of those big guys on the outside for a 40 or 50-yard gain. That's what Kirby's talking about. Or it's Milroe running for that.
Right. And so you mentioned, you know, you think, by the way, you think Mykal Williams plays?
He says hopeful. He just told us.
But I mean, do you think he plays? It sounds like it's game time.
Yes. If Kirby's saying hopeful, I'm doubtful.
Right. I'm on the fence on this. Roderick Robinson is out, the big fella, big running back. And another one, you know, guy is kind of like one of those kind of players, sneaky good, is, by the way, it's pouring out. David Bassett just came in, and he literally looks like the Gorton's fisherman right now, yeah, wearing a slicker.
You guys need a quarterback, by the way.
Yeah, talking about Oklahoma. Yes, yeah, these are five-star quarterbacks.
Oh, wait, you guys have one. You benched your starter. Sorry, this is personal.
Again, this is at Texas-Oklahoma. This is the Red River rivalry playing out right here at Flowery Branch.
It really is.
But no, London Humphrey's got mono. Who's he making out with?
Ooh.
Anyway, so the plucky wide receiver who's kind of drawing comparisons to Ladd McConkey will be out for the Alabama game, for what it's worth. And then the other injuries, you already mentioned Tate Ratledge, we talked about with that tightrope surgery, and Jordan Hall and Brinson. So we'll see. But it's they're not 100%, and we've talked about the offensive line guys moving around and trying to cover.
Williams ankle, Brinson leg, Hall leg. Those are the three guys you need back. We know Ratledge is not coming back, so at least not right now. It's Dukes and Bell. It is our headline segment, guys, brought to you by our friends at ATL Live Well. Don't just live well. We're just talking about the Dogs. We will continue to spend a lot of time on this matchup because I think it's the best one of the weekend, and it's meaningful in the SEC. Remember, there's no East or West anymore. So if you lose to Alabama, and now you start talking about, well, who's playing at the end of the year, Mike, after you get through your schedule? Georgia has one loss. Alabama has one loss. Well, guess what? Georgia lost to Alabama. Are they playing in the SEC championship game? There's a chance that could be a rematch. There's just so much that goes into this. Here's Kirby on this kid, Ryan Williams. Mm-hmm. Dogs did recruit him, guys. Everybody wanted him. He reclassified, and now he's at Alabama, and he's balling out. Here's Kirby Smart.
He's in the same line with the guys they've had in the past. Super quick, talented, confident with the ball, great ball skills, great quickness. He's a track athlete that was elite. He's a junior. You know, he comes out and he's already performing at a high level. I don't think that there's a lot of anxiety or nerves for him. He's not one of these guys that the moment's too big for him. He naturally jumped right in and has made plays in every game. They have a lot of really good skill players out on the perimeter, and I think that Jalen does a good job of using his skill set to get them the ball.
Yeah, man. It's Jalen Milroe, basically stopping a guy you couldn't figure out back in the SEC championship. More numbers? You want some stats? We got more stats. The third down thing. You know, we talked a lot yesterday about the Falcons' ineptitude on third down.
Yes, and we're going to ask Coach Raw about that today.
You realize that the UGA is just 39.4?
On third down,
13 of 33.
Well, Mike, they could move.
You were at the Kentucky game.
But they couldn't move the ball on third down against Kentucky.
Now, Alabama, interestingly enough, is 52%, 21 to 40 on their third downs. And again, USF gave them fits for three quarters.
They did.
And then they went up to Madison after about a quarter of kind of getting into a groove. Then they just stomped out, you know, the Badgers. And listen to this. Opponents are converting just 16.3 of third downs against Bama. And opponents are converting 39% of their third downs against the Dogs.
Mm.
So just at home, I mean, again, you know me. Remember Nick Bakay, the old comedian who used to work for ESPN? The numbers don't lie.
No, they don't.
So, but that's interesting. That's an interesting little factoid.
Yeah, and third down, as always, in all these games is going to be huge. It'll be huge on Saturday night. That is a 7:30 kick, by the way, ABC, I believe. And,
yep.
And it's just a big game, man. And Kirby, again, a guy hit me up. He said, "Why are you rubbing this in with Kirby?" I'm not rubbing it in.
It's a fact. I mean, it's part of the narrative.
He's 1-5 against Bama. Now, again, that's all been Saban. This is now DeBoer. But if you lose to Alabama with DeBoer, Mike, and we've been saying, all right, do you have an Alabama problem? Look, Georgia beat Alabama when it matters most in the College Football Playoff Championship game in 22 in Indiana. There's no debating that.
Right.
But they also lost the college football championship in 18, the SEC championship in 18. In 2020, they lost in Tuscaloosa in the regular season, 41-24. They lost the SEC championship in 2021. These are all these matchups with Kirby and Saban. So this is a new one because a new head coach is there. But it's an Alabama thing.
Right. And as we said, you know, Jalen Milroe, the big question this offseason, we all knew that Carson Beck is going to continue to be Carson Beck. It's just the Georgia offense needs to kickstart. They're very slow starting. Talked about the Clemson game. You were up there for Kentucky. You know, Bama, to a degree, has that. But then they really dropped the hammer. But Jalen Milroe. How is he going to be? Is he more accurate? The completion percentage has been solid. People are wondering, how is he going to work in DeBoer's offense? So far, so good.
All right, when we come back, we're going to stick with this outside zone run. We're going to try to do something more in between the tackles with the injuries to our O-line. We're going to talk about it next. Chance to talk to Raheem Morris. 3 o'clock, Mike. What are we talking to Raheem about? Well, we do have some questions about some of the things that we wondered about in the last game against Kansas City that did not play into our favor. And then we got to focus on these Saints, man. They're getting ready. Literally, they're at the indoor facility today, literally across the way here from us where we are at, getting practice in. This ain't going to be an easy game, guys. We know that. It never is with the Saints. But, Mike, when they're humming offensively, and they have been, they'll correct those mistakes they made last week. We got to find a way to get Derek Carr to turn the ball over, throw it to us a couple of times. I think those are going to be big keys for us. And then we got to get back to what we did, man. And that is Eagles game, we ran the ball really well. Last week, not so much. So can we get back to that with these offensive line injuries that we've got?
You realize the Falcons and the Saints are all tied all time at 55-55?
Matchups?
In 110 historical meetings. Isn't that wild? Yeah, it's got to be true, Carl. It's on Wikipedia. But, in the 2020s, we have gone 2-6. Saints are 6-2 against. That's part of the reason why, you know, Dan Quinn and then Arthur Smith aren't here anymore. But, last year, no one will forget that 48-17 beat down in New Orleans as Jameis Winston decides to freelance what was supposed to be victory formation. And it was a long day for our secondary as they just got a lot of big points. And, it's 48. We beat them at 24-15 at home last year. But, we're going into our 111th meeting. We're tied all time, 55-55.
Oh, we're coming. Don't worry. We got it.
Thank you. Thank you, Caden Ellis, on this show, because I was like, yo, we got to do something about this. By the way, Caleb McGarry, we mentioned with the knee, listed as day-to-day. It looks like he's going to be all right and probably play. Drew Dolman, he is out with the ankle. We know that. That news came down yesterday. So how do you feel about the replacements, and what do you think about this running game? Because that's the thing for me. Like, if you're worried about the offensive line injuries, then how does that affect your play calling and, more importantly, for Zach Robinson? And more importantly, what you want to do with Bijan and Tyler Allgeier?
Well, it seemed like at times you ran a lot to the left, you know, that first game of the year. But I know that McGarry is great at going forward. We've talked a lot about, you know, pass protection, some of the issues, and certainly Lindstrom is the gold standard. But I don't think you reinvent the wheel here. You keep doing what you're doing, right?
Yeah, when I asked Mike earlier, and I'm looking at Dave Archer as he's coming here, is he wet? It's wet out there, isn't it? It's pouring out there. I'm looking at Dave through the door here. But as
he was an Iowa State Cyclone.
Yes, this is true. Yeah. As I asked Mike about, do we stay with this outside zone? The answer is yes, guys. You don't go away from what we have done.
Right.
We just got to execute better than what we did. And Mike, you know, listen, you can't miss blocks, right? You can't miss guys who are shooting gaps is what's happened with you know, Bijan on that last play. You got to make your blocks. But I think we stick with it, and I think they'll come out and try to reestablish Bijan in the run game.
We spend a lot of time on basically the problem is just you've got to sustain drives. We're not sustaining drives. Our third down, you know it, and they know it. And we'll ask Coach Rod, I'm sure he'll have some comments on it. Our third down rate, conversion rate, is abysmal.
Yes.
We've got to continue to get the drive. And if we get more drives, more touches, then you guys get all the things. Then you can have more stuff for Kyle Pitts. You can have more stuff for Tyler Allgeier, all the things I think our fan base expects to see on a drive. But when you're shooting yourself in the foot and you're getting 15 minutes less possession or 10 minutes less, that goes out the window.
Yeah. How worried are you about the O-line, guys? Hit us up, 404-726-0929. Again, we thought it would be two starters out. It looks like it's going to be one. Maybe Coach will reveal, hey, Caleb McGarry is going to be just fine, and he will be out there for sure. But they have not stated that yet. They just basically said, hey, here is what the roster looks like. Chris, let's put a poll up at Dukes and Bell. Heading into this Saints game, what's your number one concern? Is it the fact that our third down woes have you more concerned than whether or not this offensive line is going to be able to do the job? Are you concerned that the Saints scored a lot of points in their first two games, came back to earth in the third game against the Eagles? But offensively, when they're clicking right now, Mike, they're one of the best offenses in the league. And again, red zone efficiency. They went from being one of the top teams, one or two, to this game against the Eagles where they just kind of, you know, they took a step backwards.
We got three sacks. They got 11 on the season, and they're getting it from all over the place. The leading sack master on the Saints is actually a cornerback, Alante Taylor.
So. Wait, you mean it's not Davenport?
No, it's not. No, he's not there anymore.
Oh, my bad. Sorry about that.
Cam Jordan actually doesn't have a sack yet.
But did you say Cam Jordan?
He does not have a sack.
Jordan doesn't have one?
Well, again, let's not even poke that bear, knowing that Cam Jordan
has lived. He just talks too much.
He's lived in the Falcons' backfield.
He just talks too much.
For his entire career.
No, he likes playing.
And he hates us. And he loves talking about the rivalry.
Yes.
And he loves getting into it, man. But Jordan right now, going to this one, has no sacks.
He's old.
You know, Chase Young's got a half a sack. Chase Young's there now.
Chase Young is there.
Yep. Carl Granderson has got three sacks this season.
Okay.
So,
that was a good pickup.
Right. And in his sixth year, and this dude's been around the league, he's actually, maybe Cameron Jordan's drawing some of the juice and he's getting more. But yeah, this guy, Carl Granderson, he's been there his entire career. But this year, he had 8.5 sacks last year, and he's kind of been, you know, working in tandem with our boy Cam. So watch out for him. So to your point,
Mike, let's
have to run the ball right at these guys.
Correct.
We've got to be able to establish the run. If we can't establish the run in this game, we're dead in the water because they're going to just be sitting in after right on Kirk Cousins. Just coming after him.
Well, that's – and Chris, I was going to say, add to this poll, protection. Because we saw Kurt take a lot of quarterback hits in this last game. Mike just told you what the numbers are defensively with the sacks against the Saints or playing the Saints.
But 11 sacks through three games.
It's a lot.
That's impressive.
That's a lot. It is Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. With that said, though, our guys will be amped up. They will be ready. And I truly believe that – the mistakes that we made are certainly going to get corrected, and we'll talk to Rob about that again coming up at 3 o'clock here as we're up here at Flyer Branch. But, yeah, this team, with the way that they started, had everybody going, what's going on with the Saints? And then they just were mistake-prone, kept sticking themselves or shooting themselves in the foot, should I say, against the Eagles, and that allowed the Eagles to stick around. And in the NFL, you allow teams to stick around or make mistakes, man. What did the Eagles – 3 turnovers in that game, Mike? 3?
Right. That was it. And you saw – I mean, and there's also so many 3-and-outs because we got to watch that game. We were doing that show over at the Nest at Signia, that new hotel, and it was like, man – They're just totally just getting mollywomped by the Eagles. And what the Eagles were able to do against the Saints, they weren't able to do against us at home.
They weren't.
No. Which is interesting.
Yeah, man. Coming up, by the way, we've got our player guest as well. It's going to be Mike Hughes today. He is our number 2 corner. He has been a pleasant surprise, I think, for a lot of Falcon fans. Here's the deal, guys. If we're not talking about him, that means he's playing well. And we haven't been talking about Mike Hughes. And that's good. Because when we are talking about guys, it usually means things are happening and they're not playing as well. Mike Hughes has done a hell of a job these first 3 games of the season.
They did have Carolina early with Bryce Young, but still, if you look at the Saints right now, no more numbers. Look at the numbers. Top 10 as far as points allowed, just 14.7 points allowed per game are the Saints. And by the way, our team, we're only giving up 20.3, which is enough to win because 24 is the benchmark. Problem is our offense hasn't caught up with what our defense has been able to do, even despite the lack of sacks.
You're absolutely right, Mike. And we've been playing from behind, right?
True.
I mean, think about it.
Much of our season.
Eagles game, we're playing from behind.
Had a 14-10 lead at halftime with the Chiefs, and we blew it.
Yeah. So, you know, once they took the lead, you're playing in the fourth quarter from behind. That just, again, that changes things for you, I think, from an offensive standpoint. Once again, this hour is brought to you by the Man Cave Store. Up your Man Cave game this season at mancavestore.com. Also, a little bit later on, more from Kirby Smart, as we played a couple of those sound bites from Kirby talking about this game with Alabama coming up on Saturday. And we'll hear from Alabama's coach, Caitlin DeBoer. Mike, how much pressure do you think he's got on him with the success that Alabama has had against Georgia?
I think there's some pressure, but I still think when you go back and look at what you just mentioned to start the show about Kirby's record versus Bama, it's on Georgia.
It is.
I mean, Kalen DeBoer, he's got Nick DeLena. Nick's still there. He's in the building. You know, I mean, you know.
Is that the red phone in his office?
He can talk to the statue or he can just knock on a door and talk to the man in person.
That's the red
phone.
But,
yeah, I think that I would just say more pressure on Georgia.
Yeah,
Because you started the season number 1, you've been eclipsed by Texas, and now you're number 2.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think coming into the year, everybody thought Georgia was going to be better than Alabama. And this is a proving game, man. I mean, this is the thing. Early in the season, you've got a chance to go on the road. And if you had, whatever Kirby talked about, first road game of the season and all the stuff that plays out. You've gotten past that now with Kentucky. Mm-hmm. You've got to go handle your business. So I'm with you. I think the pressure is on the Dogs to get this done on the road, to just kind of say, okay, we are who we thought we were. We're going to dive into that as well. Kalen DeBoer, though, had some things to say about being the underdog at home, which is interesting because they are. Georgia's the favorite on the road. We'll come back. Coach Ross set to join us, guys. We will pick his brain about all the things. We will ask him the questions certainly you want, and we'll ask him about the Saints.
You want answers. I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
Hopefully we can handle it.
It's Dukes and Bell.